to live righteously.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode 137, part one. This will be a two-parter. We haven't done a two-part episode since all the way back, episode 13 and 14. But now we're doing it because we talk for a good long time. It's episode 137, part one and two, where we talk with Ammon Bundy, son of Cliven Bundy, the Nevada rancher, the big standoff. We get the whole story from beginning to end. Get to know the Cliven Bundy family. Get to know what went on. Get to know how they feel about it. Get to know the spiritual side of the whole standoff. It's a lot, so enjoy the ride. It is now time for the second and third block. Before we do, find us on Twitter, at The Cultural Hall. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/The Cultural Hall. We're on Pinterest as well. Now on Instagram, follow us, at The Cultural Hall. You'll see more and more there. You can find us on Stitcher or subscribe to us on iTunes. And if you have not yet done so, please leave a review there. It allows us to be more searchable and more findable. Plus, if you like what you hear or you want other people to hear it, let me share this little tip for you. Share The Cultural Hall with your friends. It allows us to get a bigger audience, which allows us to have more weight when we try and get some of these bigger interviews. And we'd love to have your help in doing that. Also, remember that you can get the Mormon News Report. We get that. That's an email every day that gets sent to you. You can subscribe to that. Just go to the Cultural Hall's Facebook page, and you'll see those reports, and then there's a place for you to sign up. Also, if you have mission stories, be they funny or sad or disappointing or, you know, a trial of your testimony, whatever they are, whatever those mission stories are, please send them via email, richie@theculturalhall.com, or you can go to theculturalhall.com and just go to the Contact Us tab and send them along that way. I think that I've covered everything. This is now part one. It's the second and third block of The Cultural Hall, visiting with Ammon Bundy, son of Cliven Bundy, the Nevada rancher.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time for a special episode of The Cultural Hall. A last minute kind of, I was able to get myself to be part of his family adventure to the state of Utah. It's Ammon Bundy. Thanks for joining me here.
Yeah, thank you.
Now you're up visiting the wife's family.
Yeah, she's from Murray here and born and raised here. And
how'd you guys meet then? Because you're a Nevada boy.
That's right.
Is it a love found in Provo, Utah?
Nope, Southern Utah, Cedar City, Southern Utah University.
Oh, cool. When did you go there?
Oh, I went there. Well, we've been married for 13 years, so about 13 years ago.
Nice.
Is when we
Cedar City. I was there 13 years ago as well.
That's great.
But we didn't know each other then. Now, let me ask you this. Give people kind of an idea of, I don't know, where do we start in this whole thing? Ammon, you're related to Cliven Bundy how?
Well, I'm the third son of Cliven Bundy.
So there's Cliven Jr., right?
Well, there's actually not a Cliven Jr. There's quite a few of us. There's 14 of us.
Oh, my gosh.
I run third in the line, and then I have several other brothers and several other sisters. And one of my little brothers is also named Cliven Bundy, but we don't go by Junior.
He doesn't go by Junior?
No, he goes by Lance. Actually.
Oh, really? So,
yeah.
But in the family, it's probably a little bit of Junior, right?
No, we just use Lance, and we don't use much Junior at all. So,
oh.
Yeah.
I would have thought there would have been... When I imagine there's 14 kids, it's like, let's see, names. Okay, there we get the names for the first 10, and then it's junior, and then champ, and then sport, and then whatever else you can think of.
My dad just called us all each other's names, and we just answered any of them. So that's
yeah, well, you had
happened.
To.
Yeah, exactly.
One of your brothers has been fairly in the media as well in defense of your dad. Where does that fit with you?
What happened there at the ranch was pretty significant, I guess. There was a lot of media there, and we had, you know, thousands of people that were at the ranch. And so we kind of took the role of each of us took a role, and mine kind of ended up being the one there at the protest site to keep everybody happy and to front the media, if you would. And, but all of us have had a significant role in one way or the other, and been in front of the media as well. And particularly my dad. So I don't know if that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, maybe. Let's back it up a little bit. For people who may not know even what the situation is at all, take us back in time a little bit.
Okay. Well, my family has ranched in the Southern Nevada area. My family went in there and settled the area, cut a living out of that area, and homesteaded that area in 1877.
So is that like charge from Brigham Young? Hey, yep. Go down to
absolutely
Bunkerville. Is
Bunkerville
that
Bunkerville area? Okay. Yeah, Bunkerville was founded in 1877, and that was my forefathers, five generations back from me.
Okay.
Dudley Levitt and Myron Abbott actually went in there, and both of them are my great great grandfathers. So great 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 grandfathers. Yeah. There we go. Yeah, I
gotta
get
great.
One more. Yeah. And you know, the land was barren. It was hot and desert, and they cut out a living. They leveled the fields, and they began to graze on the mountains, and they developed the waters up there so that the cattle can water and use the land. And and all that was established, 130 plus years ago.
Sure.
And so my family has ranched in that area for as long as that area was developed. And basically what it come down to, about 30 years ago, 1993, the Bureau of Land Management came in and said that we couldn't ranch there any longer.
So they came in and said, listen, this property, you can't be here anymore?
Yeah, well, you can't run cattle on here anymore.
Okay.
And we had preemptive rights that was already established with the state of Nevada and with Clark County.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, this isn't state land. This is U.S. territory.
Okay.
And so none of those laws matter anymore. So off with
you. Said this is a federal issue, not a state issue.
That's
be
right.
Gone.
And so my dad at that time made a stand and said, no, this is state land. We've been a state since 1864, which means that we are a sovereign state inside the United States of Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Or, excuse
of America.
Me. Oh, yeah, that was really good.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
Start something else here. No, inside of the United States of America. And that means that the state and the land within its borders are to be controlled by the state. And that's clearly what the Constitution says. So that's where we stood. And it's been a battle ever since,
yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with a climax recently. I wonder when the federal government says, hey, you can't ranch here anymore, is it a guy who pulls up in a pickup truck and all the kids like run inside and go, don't know who that is? And then, you know, there's the slow whistling music as he walks to the porch. Or how do they even let you know on stuff like that?
Well, you know, most of it's done through the courts, and it's done through, local agents and so forth. And that's how it's done. Yeah.
So did someone come out to the house? I guess I'm asking, like, literally, was it like a letter in the mail? It's like, Dear Cliven, don't go in the following areas as designated on this map. Or was it someone came out and said, you're doing this and we don't want you to?
If you back up a little bit, and not to get into too much detail because I don't want to bore you, but
basically
what happened was is, when Nevada became a state, there was only 40,000 people that lived in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And about 12-13% of it, the federal government turned over to the state. They were supposed to turn it all over to the state, but they continued to manage the land within the state of Nevada.
Okay.
Until it, you know, gets more populated, more people are using it, and then people are starting to ask questions, well, where are our rights, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What's supposed to be happening? And this progressed until there was the Taylor Grazing Act because of the Sagebrush Rebellion and all of that. And then...
Which sounds way more interesting than what it really is,
yeah,
the Sagebrush Rebellion.
Yeah.
It's like, and they united. Nah,
yeah.
It's not what that is.
But it didn't solve really anything. It just, what happened is they just kind of agreed upon something and they kept moving forward. It didn't really solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Then pretty soon, these management laws that they were making, turned into the Bureau of Land Management, and mm-hmm. they kept making management laws. And then, like I said, about 40 years ago, all of a sudden now they're starting to claim the land.
Okay.
They're starting to say, well, now we're not just managing land. We own the land. Mm-hmm. And now we can sell it. We can push you off of it. We can fine you. We could fee you. You know, we can whatever it is. And that's when the ranchers got together. My dad was one of 53 ranchers in Clark County at the time. And they got to the point where they were being regulated so highly that they couldn't even survive.
And it wasn't financially viable to even do anymore.
No, they were doing things like the regulation was like you cut your herds in half, and you don't graze during these months.
Hmm.
And it was all about
only specifically on the federal property, right? Because there is some state's property on the ranch, or is it all technically?
See, and that's where I disagree. According to the Constitution, it's all state land.
Okay,
that's what statehood is, and that's really what this issue is about. I can get into the details if you want, but
sure.
Really, what this issue is about is this state land,
mm-hmm.
and are we a state? And Utah has the same problem.
Sure.
Or
you always hear on the radio, there's always ads of, you know, we need to claim our state land. And I know Governor Herbert is a huge advocate for state owning their state land.
He understands what statehood means. Statehood is when a territory, which is a legal term for an area under the federal government, it's U.S. territory, when it becomes populated enough, then those people can apply, if you will, or try to get statehood.
Mm-hmm.
They can apply for statehood. And why would they want to do that? You know, the reason is because when they're a U.S. territory, they're assigned a representative from U.S. Congress, from D.C.,
from
Washington,
D.C.
They're assigned a representative or representatives, and those representatives make all the final decisions. And the people can't vote them out. They can't, if there's abuses, there's no way to hold them accountable. There's mm-hmm. no, there's not even a legal way to hold these representatives accountable.
Mm.
So what it creates is a situation where there's representation, there's no representation of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a situation of abuse. It creates a situation where it's not healthy for the people and the people's rights.
Yeah, so they want to become a state so that then they can have someone from their state, someone who represents their people.
And what does statehood mean? It means that they basically define the borders, and the people become independent to vote, to be economically responsible, and all the things that else comes with being independent and sovereign. They become a sovereign state and part of these United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they become. And all those rights are to be given to them. Well, the Western states, these 13 Western states, were denied a lot of their rights because the land and the resources were not the control of the land and the resources were not given over to the people.
Hmm.
And so it causes a lot of problem. Economically, it causes a huge problem for Utah and Nevada, because they need their land and their resources in order to be able to economically be independent.
Mm-hmm.
And so we rely on a lot of the eastern states for our income. I mean, that's just the way it is. Like Arizona's 47% of their budget comes from the federal government.
Really?
Utah is close to that. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's significant.
So given that kind of background, let's get back into it. So 1993.
Right.
They say, hey, you know what? This is federal land, and here is what we want you to do. We want you to either cut your herd in half.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm not going to do that. I'm not cutting my herd in half. That he, as I understand it, that's how he makes his entire, how your dad makes his entire living, is being a
that's
rancher,
correct.
Right?
That's correct.
So he can't be like, well, I'm going to now make half of what I'm making. So he says, yeah. I'm no.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So really what happened, there's 53 ranchers. They got together and they started digging into like, well, what are their rights?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is people ask, well, Why were you paying for grazing fees at one time and then you stopped?
Right.
It was just simply because they didn't know better.
Okay.
They didn't know better. So what happened is the regulations got so heavy that they started to try to figure out, well, where is our foothold? Where can we start to, you know, push back?
Right.
And they started digging and, you know, peeling off all these layers of regulation and code.
Mm-hmm.
And they peeled it all the way back to the U.S. Constitution.
Okay.
And they found in the U.S. Constitution that it clearly defines what the federal government can own as far as land inside a state. And it says in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, that the federal government can only own – there's three stipulations that the federal government has to follow in order to own land inside a state.
Okay, hit me. What are they?
Okay, one is they have to have consent from the state legislatures.
Okay.
Two is they have to purchase it.
Okay.
And three, they can only use it for dockyards, arsenals, military bases, those type of things. And it does not allow the federal government to own public land inside a state.
Okay.
Okay. So when they found that, I mean, it was better than they ever imagined. They thought, oh, my goodness, this is the answer. This is where we need to stand. But unfortunately, the ranchers at the time were afraid, you know, they're standing.
Sure, I mean, you're talking about the federal government of the United States of America, so it's not like it's like, hey guys, we found this, can we stop paying?
Exactly.
And they're like, sure,
exactly,
you bet.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of them were afraid that they were going to lose their livelihood, they were going to lose their family ranches and all of that. And so 51 out of the 53 compromised with the federal government.
Really?
And two of them said no, and they stood on principle because they, my dad and one other rancher, Keith Ney, said, we now understand where this should be according to the Constitution, and we have to stand. And then, unfortunately, Keith Ney passed away.
Okay.
And so my dad ended up being the only rancher left in Clark County. And you say, well, what happened to all the 51?
Yeah.
The BLM put them out of business.
Just weren't able to be ranchers anymore?
They weren't able to be ranchers, yeah, because they compromised with the regulations. They actually adhered to the regulations that the BLM put upon them, and they couldn't survive.
So when you say regulations, we're talking about the cutting the herd in half, a higher fee and fine?
No, it wasn't really a money thing. It was more of being able to make money.
Okay.
And you have to be able to graze at a certain time during the spring.
Mm-hmm.
That's when your cattle put on enough weight to make it through the hot summer.
So if they're not able to graze, sorry, you'll have to forgive my cattle ignorance.
That's all right.
So if they're not able to graze in that early mid-spring, then they can't put on enough weight and live through
and,
the...
And the calving season is during the spring.
Okay.
And there's a whole other benefits or needs that happen during the spring. You know, that's when there's basically they're preparing and getting enough weight on them to get through the summer, yeah.
And so feeding them without just having them be out to graze, that's... just way too expensive.
Way too expensive, and that's the reason why you're there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reason why my great-great-grandfather went up there and put, infrastructure, water infrastructure, and why the cattlemen and my father and other ranchers spread this water throughout the land so that they can use and benefit from this land. That's basically what it is. And that's how they survive.
So in 93, how old are you? In 1993, how old are you?
Actually, in 93, I am 17 years old.
Okay, yeah. So do you remember this starting to occur?
Oh, yeah, and the thing is this went on before. I mean, my whole life has been part of my whole life, and even my grandfather's life, you know, these issues and trying to resolve them. And, you know, at one time, my dad even sat on a rancher's committee for the Bureau of Land Management.
Okay. Because it sounds to me like he wanted to play the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were trying to make the best out of what we had. We're trying to make a living and trying to survive. And each time we would compromise with them, it just got worse and worse for all the ranchers.
Mm-hmm. And now there's not anymore.
Now my dad's the last rancher in Clark County. And actually, if you look at Mojave County in Arizona and basically stretch clear to the Pacific Ocean, he's the last rancher in that whole area that has a full-time ranch that lives and makes his living fully off of the ranch. He is the last rancher.
So, which is going to be a great, by the way, title for the movie made about this whole thing, The Last Rancher. Throw that out there. So the government continues to do these things, and he says, you know what, I'm not going to pay it. I'm not going to decrease my herd. I'm not going to do all this stuff. And then does it seem to kind of disappear for a little while, or how? Because, I mean, we're talking 93, and now it's 2014, so that's 21 years where I would think that if anyone was really serious about – you know, shutting you down, that what happened earlier this year would have happened 15 years ago or something.
Well, that's an interesting point. It kind of brings us to the next, like, a real concerning issue with all the people in the United States, and mm-hmm. that's what's happened over the 20 years. Because in 1993, basically, the Bureau of Land Management didn't have the enforcing power to basically come in and just do it by force.
Mm-hmm.
They had, you know, supposedly the legal standing, at least with the local BLM courts and all of that. They had, you know, but they didn't have the enforcement power.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the last 20 years, we have seen them increase in enforcement power. 20 years ago, a BLM ranger was a funny-looking guy in a hat that mm-hmm. was nice and would teach you about the birds and tell you to be kind to the animals yeah. and all of that, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happened now, you look at a BLM ranger, he's a fully equipped tactical officer.
Okay.
And he's got all the gear. You look at his vehicle. It's got weapons in it, fully automatic weapons, shotguns. You look at the way he walks around. He's fully equipped, just like he has authority to be a law enforcer.
And that wasn't the case 20 years ago.
Wasn't the case 20 years ago. And then also the Bureau of Land Management since then has been building up their, militant forces, if you will. I don't know how.
Like arsenal, are you saying? Like
no, I'm talking about actually building up a special, force team.
Okay.
To come and do their heavy hitting for them. And you start to see them using these teams, and they hire out for their snipers. They hire out for their, you know, basically their heavy hittings. And they've organized this over the last 20 years. They've also started to organize where they're gonna when they arrest people, where to put them and what to do with them, because none of that was established 20, 30 years ago.
Sure.
And so. What's happening now, and this is the danger that the people are in, these agencies have now figured out a way to make their own law, mm-hmm. and they don't make the law through legislation. They just make a code or a regulation, and they file it in the federal registry. And then now they have their own law enforcement. They can come in and enforce the law, and they have their own jails and court systems where they can interpret the law and prosecute the law. And basically what it does is it allows let's say a head of a department, let's say like the Southern Nevada district, he can say, hey, don't step on that plant.
Mm-hmm.
And then he files that. He makes a regulation or a code, and he says, no one can step on that plant. And he files it in the federal registry. And then if someone steps on that plant or runs it over or whatever, by accident or on purpose,
mm-hmm.
he can actually arrest that person, seize his assets, throw him in jail for an indefinite amount of time, and prosecute him fully. And the law was never legislated. The enforcement was never authorized. The interpretation was never done by the proper judges. And the courts he's being held, or the jails he's being held in, are actually unconstitutional. And that basically is what's called the unlimited power.
Sure.
Or a separation of power. And our country is founded on a separation of powers and checks and balances. And we've lost that because we've given these agencies, the federal agencies mostly, we've given them so much power to be able to write their own law, enforce their own law, interpret their own law, and prosecute their own law.
Do you feel like there should be any regulation, though,
on any of the land? Yeah, but I think it should be done by the local people.
Okay. So similarly, I guess, if it were someone that was from the state of Nevada that said, hey, I don't want you to step on that, and then did it that way, would it? I mean, is it a different because it's a federal to state power, or is it just the aggressiveness of the regulation?
It's a little better because of state, but
okay.
The way it should be done is that the law should be legislated, you know, gone through the Senate, Congress, and then signed by the governor or you know. So forth. It should be legislated.
Mm-hmm.
And then the law enforcement should be the local sheriff. The local sheriff actually has the highest policing and arresting power given to them by the people, because he's the highest elected official that has the arresting and policing power. So the enforcement of it should be done by the county sheriff, and it should be done with minimal force possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the local court should be the one to interpret and prosecute the law. It should never be done the way it's being done right now.
But there is definitely a place for federal courts and for federal enforcement of, yeah. you know, like your places like your FBI, and there is a place for a Bureau of Land Management and those kind of things.
Very little. And that's because there's very little room for any land management on a federal level. The Constitution doesn't allow it. Unless it's like a post office or a military base or whatever. And most of those agencies have their own way of managing their own land. And so I'm not against federal agencies. Mm-hmm. We're not against federal agencies. I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of people want to like put us in that category, sure. if you were.
No, there yeah, I think you're great, but there needs to be federal agencies. You know,
yeah, no.
I mean, there does.
Yeah, I agree. There is. But let me give you a little bit of a scope of what at least I believe, and hopefully you can see it this way as
sure.
well. The people, individuals primarily should govern themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when there's a problem with individuals, or even let's say families, but let's say when there's a problem with individuals or families and they can't get along, then
sure.
that's when a local government should step in and whatever the right word would be, basically mediate
yeah.
the problem and solve it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If the local governments can't solve it, then it goes to, let's say the township can't resolve it,
mm-hmm.
then it should be appealed to the county. And when the county can't solve it, then it should be appealed to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And when the state can't solve it, let's say there's two states that can't solve problems between themselves,
sure.
then that's when the federal government is appealed to and should resolve it. But the federal government should never come down into the individual lives and government of the people and try to meddle and govern and control the people on a local level. That should be handled on a local level. That's where the people's rights and where freedom comes from. When our governments are doing their proper role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet.
That's when people are free, because two individuals can work together with each other and they have the right to work that out themselves first.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can't for whatever reason, then that's when they appeal to a higher government, if you will, and so forth.
How did it get to be so messy?
Well,
earlier this year, I guess, is what I'm pointing to the incident of it. Like,
yeah.
It seems like, well, you should pay this. Well, I'm not going to. Well, you should not have this much hurt. Okay, well, I'm not going to. How did it get to where it's like, and, you know, hundreds of people with assault rifles are lining
yeah.
the streets and these people are coming in to get. How did it get from we'd really appreciate it if you follow these guidelines to
uh-huh.
this mass media storm that we see?
Well, I wouldn't be fair if I didn't bring in that this all. The reason why they regulated the land was because of an endangered species.
Okay.
The desert tortoise.
Okay.
So you have the desert tortoise, and this is what they do. And when I say they is most of the federal agencies, the land managing agencies,
uh-huh.
the Forest Service, BLM, and all so forth, and the Park Service, they take an endangered species and they say that it's endangered.
Sure.
You know, and they put like, they have a quota where they put so many animals on the endangered species list or insects or plants or whatever it is. So anyway, they say that there's a environmental danger here.
Okay.
And that we need to protect it. And it doesn't matter whether it truly is in danger or not. They have this quota that they meet every, I think there's 260, species that is waiting to be put on the list over the next year or two or whatever it is. There is a full list that's saying, okay, we're going to put them on this. So anyway, you have this. So this is their pattern. They have an environmental concern. They say I have to control and protect this concern.
Mm-hmm.
So then they go into the land under the name
of the federal
government. Number, and they remove the people off the land. They remove all the usage off the land, the forestry, the grazing, the mining, or whatever it might be, the camping, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
the four-wheeling, the it doesn't matter what it is. They completely remove most of it completely off the land or whatever, and then they sit there and they lock it down and control it. And then what we start to see has been happening now is now then they start using the resources and actually selling the land for their own benefit, for the federal government, not for the state. So that's a pattern, and that's what was happening in our area. They made a wilderness area out of part of the ranch, a good part of the ranch, for the desert tortoise.
Okay.
So then they said that they.
By the way, have you seen a desert tortoise? They're adorable.
Okay, yeah, they are. No, I agree. I agree. And the interesting thing is, study after study after study proved that the cattle and the tortoise benefit. At least the cattle benefit the tortoise because of their manure, because they actually till up the ground and create forage. There's been many, many, many studies that
prove. Well, you read in the scriptures about how one day the tortoise will lie down with the cattle. I may have read that wrong.
No, that's good. I like that. But anyway, so on a lighter note, basically, that's what happened. And I know we're getting back to what happened at the ranch.
Yeah.
So
they essentially said, hey, you know what, this is, it needs to be this land. We got to protect the desert tortoise. Mm-hmm. So now we really, you know, we said before that we really needed you to not do this, but now we really need you not to do this.
Yeah. But it went back and forth in the court. Like I said,
so
twice.
It was court before.
Yeah. Twice we went one in court. Proving that the cattle was beneficial to the desert tortoise.
Okay.
And they actually pulled the desert tortoise off the endangered species list.
Okay.
And then it was proved more than one time that the desert tortoise was not endangered, and it was agreed upon in court.
Mm-hmm.
And so this went back and forth, but they sat there and even on the court steps say, for now, the desert tortoise is designated as not. They just were determined to remove all the cattle off the land. Mm-hmm. And it really didn't make sense other than they wanted the cattle and the human usage of the land gone.
To gain so that they could be able to sell it. Are there a great deal of resources on the land that the government stands to gain from if they can gain access and sell it? Or why are they so hell-bent on getting it?
That's a good point. And a lot of people have asked that. And just
because I've seen Nevada, and there isn't anything in Nevada that I want.
Well, that's good. It's funny you say that. Yeah, because it's pretty dry.
It's like, hey, what's this? Great. More
barren,
of this
yeah.
and more of this? Perfect. You can have it. Keep it.
Well, there are resources. There has been designated more and more resources that are underneath the ground, of course. You know, we know what that means. But then this has been happening all over the Western United States. It's not just Nevada. This is a pattern. They take an environmental issue. They remove the people, you know, the people that are using it and have rights to it. They remove it in the name of protecting an environmental species or, you know, environmental issue. And then they lock the land down, and then they begin to sell and use the land for their own benefit. Mm-hmm. And that's just a pattern that they've been doing for the last 40 years. And now they're actually using the same pattern on private property in both the West and in the Midwest area, particularly where they say, you know, like Nebraska and those Midwest states are having problems with the EPA and with the BLM and Forest Service taking private land, saying that, you know, there's like a sage hen that needs to be protected or something like that. And they come in and say that your private land is their refuge. And so they literally will come in and just take your private land. They've been trying to do it in Texas.
They don't have to compensate in those cases. They can just say, no, well, it's private land.
You know
what I'm saying?
But let me ask you this question. So I find that interesting that you say that. Is it okay in any period,
time
to take private land?
No, I don't think so. But it certainly maybe lessens the blow if it's like, okay, pal, listen, here is this, and I'll give you, you know, fair usage for your land, and I'll pay you, as opposed to I'm going to take this and just completely screw you over. I think that, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think that anyone should be able to say, hey, taking this one way or another, but I wanted to give you this offer, but one is certainly a little kinder to the individual than the other.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And to answer the question, no, there's usually very little compensation that is given. If they say that they're taking it by like eminent domain or something, mm-hmm. they'll usually give them a bottom price for it. But that doesn't even happen very much. Usually yeah. they just take it in the name of an environmental concern. Hmm. Or they even take control of it and say, well, you own it, but we control it. So what good does ownership mean? You own it, but you can't do anything with it. You can't use it. You can't, you know, be on it. You can't do nothing, but, you know, because of this environmental concern.
Hmm.
And so that's what's happening down the line. We even have to worry about our private property that has sure. been taken. And it's the same pattern.
Consumer alert! Consumer alert!
Hey, this is Dan the Laptop Man from PC Laptops, and there's an extremely fatal malware infection called CryptoLocker that's infecting thousands of computers. It encrypts all your files so you can't access them, and then displays a message telling you that the files can be recovered if you pay a huge ransom. If you don't pay, your files are destroyed. This evil infection also destroys all your data on your connected backup drives. People are losing everything. It is the scariest virus I've ever seen in 20 years fixing computers. There's good news, though. At PC Laptops, we can help protect you. Bring your laptop or desktop computer into any one of our PC Laptops locations right now. We'll scan for free and show you how to protect yourself. Call us before it's too late at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. At PC Laptops, we got your back and we love you.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
So, anyway, getting back to...
Yeah, so how did it get, you know, all this makes sense. Mm-hmm. I get the fight. I see both sides.
Yeah.
So how did it get to, all right, rally up. We're, you know, these guys are coming in and we need to protect them and line the streets and grab your guns. How does it get
okay.
to that?
Okay, so they got a court order about 5 years ago.
The BLM.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
In a federal
court.
Local court, okay, to be able to remove the cattle. But they didn't do it. Actually, I apologize. It was 9 years ago.
Okay.
But they didn't do anything about it because, you know, the same enforcement reasons that we talked about and mm-hmm. so forth. So 2 years ago, they went to try to enforce that court order. But
to go remove the cattle.
To remove All right. the cattle. But then
did they give you a heads up? They're like, hey,
they
we'll
did,
be here
yeah,
at 2.
They did.
We're going to take your cattle.
Yep. They did give us a heads up, or at least, you know, we were aware of it. And so then they realized that the court order had expired.
Okay.
So then they ran it through the courts again, and they basically had it renewed. And all the court order said was that they could basically remove the cattle. It didn't say they could sell the cattle. It didn't say they could shoot the cattle. It didn't say they can destroy the water right, mm-hmm. the water
Just had to
usage.
Get cattle off
yeah,
land.
That's all that the court order allowed them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they made plans to do that, and March 27th, they came in and they set up literally a military compound, a military base. And what I mean by that is that it had a perimeter. There was around 200 armed agents that came in. There was about 50 contract cowboys that came in, helicopters, equipment, communication towers, light towers, sniper points all around the compound. That's what they came in. It took them 10 days to set up.
Jeez.
And then they started gathering the cattle. And when they gathered well, let me back up a little bit. They also went into the local community there in Mesquite, and they rented out a whole hotel. And we're talking about, I think it was like a, I don't know, Hampton Inn or one of those.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 4-story hotel. They rented the whole thing out. They put a perimeter around and they guarded it full time, right in the middle of town.
Hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, the people are, you know.
High alert. What's high going alert, on? What is this?
I mean, there's hundreds of federal vehicles in town.
Although I will probably say for the city of Mesquite, they're like, oh, cool, finally someone's coming back to Mesquite and we can make a lot of money. But that's
there was
a little bit
about that, you know.
that is a funny whole side note where they're like, hey, maybe we can open up this other casino that's been closed down for so long. Well, maybe.
That's funny you say that because when we run them out and, you know, all of a sudden they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the city of Mesquite had been thriving for a while, so there was some business owners who were like, "Man, couldn't this last a little longer?" Yeah. You know.
All right, so let's get back to it. So they set up a perimeter. They do this whole thing. Get the hotel in town,
and then they literally locked down the land. And I'm talking about locked down the land. They had armed agents on every road, every trail, everything, and so anybody who would even step off the paved road, they would confront, or if there was some like people that didn't even know what was going on and ended up going into the hills.
Right, I'm going for a hike. What, the federal agent?
Well, they would come down upon them. They would confiscate their guns, threaten them, the whole nine yards. And these people didn't even know nothing about it. This is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I explain it a little bit as like a Red Dawn fashion.
Okay,
you know, like Red Dawn. I mean, people come in, they take over your town, they lock down your land, and then you got this little, I mean, this family, like they surrounded the ranch. We had snipers on us, we had high surveillance equipment on us, and that's basically what they did, and that's how they came in. And then the reason they did that is to lock the land up so that they could gather the cattle, they said.
Okay,
right. So
now, let me just ask, because it's kind of an aside thing. This sounds almost unreal when you say snipers and towers and stuff. You saw snipers and sniper, you know, the long-range sniper rifles, and you saw the light towers. It wasn't, well, someone said that they saw someone. You literally saw all this yourself.
So yes, and for your listeners, all you, you know, I could say yes for sure. I mean, undoubtedly all of that was there. I saw it with my own eyes.
Okay.
But there's thousands and thousands of pictures on the internet of them.
Okay. But you can understand where I'm coming from, where it's like, oh yeah, they were following me. And it's like, no one's following you, crazy. Right. You're just crazy.
Right. I'm the crazy one. Right. And I understand that. And I could fully appreciate that. But this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if you Google, you know, Bundy Ranch, Clive and Bundy, Bundy Standoff, or even My Name, Ammon Bundy, and you start looking at the pictures and the images in there, you'll see what was there.
Okay.
And you'll see the type of weapons they had. You'll see if you go through it, you'll see where they had snipers. And I'll just go quickly through the story pretty much, because they were designated to stay there for 7 weeks. And they were only gathering the cattle for 7 days. So basically what happened, they came in, locked the land down. The community was very upset about it. Of course, my family was very upset about it. They start gathering the cattle, and they gather them by helicopter. And it was 100-degree weather when they were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It was our calving season, so they were running the cattle really hard. They were separating the baby calves. Most of them were only a week, or some of them were brand new calves. They're separating these calves from their mothers. And we knew that was going on up there. We knew these cattle were being killed. We knew that they were being, you know, these calves were being separated and were going to die. So that was going on.
And this is your livelihood. It's important to point that out. It's not just, oh, it's my pet. This is where you guys make your money.
They also, the Saturday that they started gathering the cattle, they put up two First Amendment areas. And what they said is that, and they were just a fence. They were that orange mesh fence, fencing, you know, construction fencing.
Sure.
And it was in a big, you know, circle. And then they put First Amendment area on the front of it. And they said that if anybody was to express their First Amendment rights, they had to do it in those areas.
Okay.
And that just infuriated the people too, you know.
Sure.
It just shows.
Tell me where I can get my free speech.
Yeah, that's what the first, you know, that's where it is. You know, you know, they're saying, well, you can have your First Amendment rights, but you can only do it here.
You can have it right over there.
Yeah.
We're going to go continue to do
that. Exactly. And so the people were not very happy about that, of course. And on Sunday, my family was coming back. My dad wasn't there, but my brothers, three brothers some of my nephews and my sister was there and we're coming back from church.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to church in Bunkerville, so it's about 12, 13 miles out of town. They were coming back, and they could see up in the hills up there where they were had trucks, and they were filling the trucks with the cattle and so forth. So my brother, my family, there was three vehicles. They pulled us off the side, and my brother had his iPad, and he began to film them. Mm-hmm. And he was wanting to film them so that as they come down onto the road, he could film them, and he could see film that they had their cattle, and that he could film, you know, what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so he's standing there with the iPad, and he's literally like 2 feet off the state highway. And immediately they noticed, well, not immediately, but within a few minutes, they noticed up on the hills above them, on each side, there was two snipers on each side that set up, and they were pointing down at the family. And then about 20 agents came down and proceed at gunpoint to put my family, and we're talking about kids all the way down to, well, my little sister had a baby in it, a 6-month-old baby in her hand, and they literally got their weapons and their guns on them, forcing them back into the vehicle, while about 15 of them went over there and proceeded to beat my brother to the ground. And what was he doing? He was filming them.
They asked him to stop filming, and he wouldn't.
Yeah.
And
that's... Well, what they did, they didn't even ask that. They started to say this code. They started to rattle off this code, and what we found out that code was the code that the federal code that didn't allow them to protest unless they were in that box. Mm. Okay.
Okay.
That's what it was. So they went and beat him, and he had just kind of to stage this correctly is when he saw them, he got his cell phone out and he called 911. Mm-hmm. And so he's filming in one hand, and he's got a cell phone in the other hand. And
they literally
just tackled him and beat him to the ground. And when I say they beat him, it was like gang style. I mean, they literally beat him. They punched him. They kicked him. They tromped on him. And then afterwards, that wasn't enough, so they had to sick their dogs on him. Mm. And they handcuffed him.
Which brother is this?
Dave.
Dave, okay.
Yeah, they handcuffed him, put him in the... their vehicles, and then they took them to the compound, and there they
the compound that they had set up.
Okay. Yeah, and there they for about 4 hours they just trotted him around like he was their trophy and interrogated him and said, "Hey, we got one of Clive and Bundy's sons," and you know it was really, and then they sent him to Henderson, and kept him there, interrogated him through the night, and several other things, and then that morning, they finally cited him for resisting arrest and failure to disperse. Mm. That was the thing. And I'll point out that after this is all over, my brother went to go fight those tickets, and they said magically that just disappeared. It's not in the system anymore.
The tickets aren't in the system anymore?
Not in the system anymore. They lost the
charges.
Yeah, charges. Yeah. So anyway, you can see what's going on. So anyway.
What a mess, by the way.
I challenge you to take this
side note. I mean, what a mess for all sides and parties.
I agree. I mean, I realize that, you know, it's your job here to take a more moderate, neutral position. But this is a mess. It was a mess, and it still is a mess. Anyway, so that case infuriated the people even more.
Sure, because he's one of their own. Yeah, so it's like, what's going on?
He's a businessman. He's been a businessman in the community for many, many years. He's loved by the people. He's been very kind to the people, very generous, he's helped a ton of people out. He's more of a quiet individual that doesn't like a lot of spotlight or a lot of a lot of attention. That's the type of person he is. And here they just beat him down for expressing his First Amendment right and standing on the side of a state highway. And meanwhile, they put his family and his family by gunpoint, forced him into their vehicle. Mm. I mean, women, children, babies.
And
men.
You were there.
I was not there at that time. No.
Did any of the other? There was a couple other brothers there. Did any of them try to get in and like fight it off or anything like
that?
Or were they just like, whoa?
Well, they had snipers down. In fact, my older brother Ryan was there, and he took his binoculars before this happened, like before they actually came down, and because he was looking to see what they were doing up there on the hill.
Sure.
And when he looked up on the hill, he was looking straight down the barrel of a sniper. Mm. I mean, they had him right on him. And that's what was going on. And so at the time, he felt that it was really important to not confront them, that he probably would have been shot, you know? So
he goes in, he gets taken in. Is that the thing that breaks the back for everyone, where they're
now
can't wait?
The people were very patient, very civil with all of this. You know, since this is a, I guess, a Mormon related.
Yeah. Let's talk about it. Whatever you want to. Go wherever.
Well, I actually live in Arizona. I think I've told you that.
Yeah, you're off of the ranch, right?
Yeah, I'm off the ranch. I have a business in Phoenix, actually, and I live in Levine. And, you know, I'm hearing what's happening, and I'm literally beside myself. I mean, I cannot believe that what's happening is, mm-hmm. one, happening in our country, and two, it's happening to my family.
Yeah.
And so I'm deeply concerned. I'm very concerned. And so, of course, you're praying and asking the Lord to protect my family. You're asking him to help us understand, to know what to do. That's mm-hmm. what we're doing. And my dad is doing the very same thing. You know, he's been doing this for a long time. He's fought this battle and asked the Lord to help him and to guide him and to make sure that he's in the right and all of those things. So now my brother, we don't even know where he's at, because we didn't know where they took him. You know, we were deeply concerned about him. We don't even know if he's alive, what's happening. You know, we don't know. The style in which they took him was very disturbing. Mm-hmm. And so we're praying and asking the Lord to help him and help my family. And during this whole ordeal, you know, the newspapers were getting a hold of it, and it was starting to become more public. And the reporters would ask my dad, well, what are you going to do when they come do this? And my dad would always say that I'm going to do whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, well, what is it? Whatever. What does that mean? What does whatever it take means?
And he seems a little threatening.
It does. But then he would say, well, whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say this because there came a time when my dad said that he would gather the family and we would do whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And when we meant whatever it takes, we didn't know. That's why he said that.
Right.
Because at that point we said we would follow the guidance of the Lord and do the best we can with it. That's what whatever it took. But most people wouldn't understand that.
Right.
And so, but there was a time where when my brother was in where he was taken,
mm-hmm.
and I'm asking my dad, well, should I come? Do you want me to come now?
Yeah. I'm in my truck. I'm on my way.
Well, a week before, he said, hey, look, because they were setting it up, took 10 days. He says, you know, I'm going to want you to come, but when you come, I want you to prepare to feed a lot of people. He says, I want you to prepare to feed 200 people for 7 days. And so I completely had this all prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And because my dad did know at that time that, you know, he had felt that if it was going to be resolved, it would need the people to come and rally and support.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be taken care of.
Sure.
They needed water and food and all of these things. So he asked me to get prepared for that. So there was that insight given to him already.
Mm-hmm.
So we have my brother, and I know I'm getting long-winded.
I'm fascinated.
Anyway, we have my brother, you know, we don't know where he's at. I'm in Arizona. All my other brothers are in their areas. We all have families. You know, I got a brother in Cedar City. I got one in the middle of Nevada, Nye County. I've got all over St. George, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're scattered all over. We have jobs and businesses, families, and, you know, we're normal people.
Right.
The ranch doesn't sustain us at all. It only sustains about two families.
Yeah.
And even barely at that some years. So, you know, 14 kids, we're out
doing
all this other stuff. And, but we're all communicating and all very concerned about our brother Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And late that evening, I don't know if it was still Sunday or if it was Monday morning, my dad says that it's time to get together. And to help you understand that, what that meant is,
mm-hmm.
is that we're possibly... Well, I'll just back up just a little bit. During the setup time, there was kind of a mediator, a liaison that was reaching out to my family and was talking to one of my brothers, my brother Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And he, during some conversation, said that if we resisted, that this would be another Ruby Ridge or Waco. That's exactly what he said.
Yeah, because as we're talking, I'm thinking kind of David Koreshian.
Yeah, and that's style. How they were trying to,
label it.
Label our family and label our situation, you know, Mormon family, 14 kids, rancher, you know, standing strong.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All of that, you know. And so he said out of his mouth that if we resisted that this would be another Ruby Ridge or Reiko. Basically, they would kill our family.
Hmm.
And so when my dad gathered together, us together, he knew that there was a possibility that we would lose our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's serious to be able to do that.
Sure.
Be able to gather your family and say, hey, we are going to make a stand. And you could say, well, that's pretty crazy. Why would you do that over a bunch
I'm
of
sure
cattle?
Some people listening right now are going, that's really crazy, pal.
Yeah.
But
why would you do that over a bunch of cattle? Or why would you do that over land? And that's where I strongly say that this was not about cattle.
Mm-hmm.
This was not about land. This was about freedom and about protecting our inalienable rights. This was about the Constitution and literally hanging by a thread.
Mm-hmm.
This is about saying enough is enough. And this, and also the people in the city, some of them understand, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to stereotype, but many people don't understand what's been happening to the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's not the stuff we have to deal with.
No.
People in the city don't know.
That's just the way life
is.
Just
the same way.
Yeah.
Rural folk don't get city
folk. Exactly. I mean,
there's some that do
understand, you know, people have made, like I came from the country, but I live in the city now. So, I mean, I've seen a lot.
So hopefully you have that
both.
Knowledge and you're able to gain everything, but you don't really get it unless you experience it,
right.
Whatever it is.
Well, a good example, and I really like this because it parallels is, you know, the Gideon robbers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did they do? They came out of the mountains, and who did they attack first? They attacked the rural people of the rural Nephites and the farmers and the I'm sure the herdsmen at the time, and till at the point where they had to leave their farms and had to leave their herds and gather with the people in the city,
mm-hmm.
because it got so bad that they were being killed, that everything was being stolen from them because they couldn't survive, because the Gadarant and robbers were coming down and literally stealing and taking their lands, taking their property, stealing their crops, all of these things, at the point where the people finally had to come all together. And then when all of them were threatened, you know, then they stood, and for 7 years they were under siege, and they finally had to fight back and literally take their lands back.
Yeah.
And I know that's a pretty strong parallel,
sure.
But that is what's been happening to the rural community of America for the last 40, 50, you know, you could even go 60 years if you want. And that's why, you know, the price of meat is so high. The price of all foods are so high because these ranchers and these agriculturalists in these areas are having harder and harder time making a living.
Mm-hmm.
And more land and more farms and more ranches are being taken and we no longer have those resources in America. And perfect example is Clark County, Nevada, 53 ranchers.
Yeah, now you know, there's one.
And now there's one.
The last rancher, which, by the way, again, I'm copyrighting the title for that movie.
That's right. So I mean, we have to be aware of what's really happening. And I think that we're naive to think that, oh, well, we're in the last days, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So mm-hmm. we claim that we are in the latter days and last days. And we have the Book of Mormon that constantly throughout the Book of Mormon is teaching us that it is a parallel of what's going to happen in the last days.
Sure.
And it's a warning. It's a voice from the dust teaching us of what is going to happen. And yet we say that it's not happening.
Yeah.
Or that
it's not
going to happen.
Oh, that's not quite it. Yeah.
I'm telling you, it is happening. But And it's happening in many different ways. And it happens to the city people and it happens to the rural people. But there's been a blatant attack upon the rural community and the agriculturalists of this country. And it's something that if we can be aware of, we can help correct it and help sustain, our life and our freedoms and all of this. So anyway, going back to, this wasn't just about a cattle rancher. Mm-hmm. This wasn't just about, land or even a desert tortoise or even Clive and Bundy or any of that. This was about the fundamental rights of people and individuals. And that's why we were willing to put our life down.
And that's why so many others, too, I think, united to the cause
that's
as well.
Exactly
they go,
right.
Yeah, you bet. I don't give a heap about his cattle necessarily, but it's, it's something bigger than all this.
And we said that the whole time. This is not about one rancher, one cattle. We would not ask you to be here. If we really never asked anybody to be there, but we wouldn't, that's not what this is about. Mm-hmm. That's not why we're here.
How many people came?
Well, all in all, we didn't keep track, obviously, but hundreds of people came and went. Others came on different days. On the Saturday when the standoff actually happened, there was probably close to 2,000 people that
Jeez.
Were there. But I bet you there was overall, close to 5,000 people that came and went on the ranch.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And so in the process of all this, they actually, and what I had never understood is they actually did gather the cattle. So what did they do with them at that point?
So the part of the compound was they had corrals for
okay.
them. And so they gathered them, and they gathered close to 400 head.
How many head are there altogether?
We figure there's about 600 head
okay.
Altogether. It's a large open range.
So they got
a good
percentage.
They got all the easy, areas. And in fact, the funny thing is they never, ever went down to the wilderness area and never gathered cattle down there. And they knew that was going to be the hardest area, for them to gather and the hardest area and the easiest area for us to protest and, because there's only one way in and there's only one way out. So mm-hmm. I'm sure they were saving that for last. They thought that they were going to stomp out any problems. They had 200 army agents. They can handle this, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that they would gather the easy cattle and then they'd go down there and gather the harder cattle. So anyway, but what happened is that happened to Dave, my brother Dave, on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Then the people kind of started gathering on Monday. And that's when we got him back, and they kind of started to rally at that point, and newspapers and started publishing it. Local newspapers started publishing it, and some of the, other people started to keep an eye on it.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, some teenage kids from the community went down a road, and the agents started coming down upon them, and the people at the protest site could see them because it's open,
sure.
And could see them from a distance, and they actually got in their vehicles and went down there and actually formed a line between the boys and the agents and said, "You're not going to do the same thing you did to Dave."
Mm.
And there was about five or six vehicles from what I understand, so there wasn't the whole force upon them, but they did back them down. And then they, protected those kids and got them out of there.
Stupid teenage kids trained.
Well, it was, but, I don't know if they were trying to provoke it or whatever.
Oh,
but,
yeah, watch this.
Right.
No, they won't.
Right. But either way, it was happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then.
But I just love kids sitting around going, dude, I'm done playing my Xbox. You want to go rally some
exactly.
federal troops against us?
Something like
cool,
that.
Cool, let's go do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Then can we go swim and go buy Taco Bell? All right, cool.
Grab your flag, grab your American flag. Yeah. Let's go do this.
America!
All right.
So that's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Okay.
So that was what happened on Tuesday. Wednesday rolls around, and we're starting to get more and more people. There was a lot of people, but coming and going, but mm-hmm. Wednesday afternoon, there's probably about 40, 50 people there. And in the evening, there would be a couple hundred because everybody gets off work
and
come down. And the local community was very, very supportive, of course. They were part of it, and they were feeling it themselves. They couldn't go up there and four-wheel. They couldn't go up there and hike, camp.
Yeah, all the stuff they loved.
Hunt, and all the stuff that they had done their whole life, their fathers had done, their grandfathers, their great-grandfathers had done. They were literally locked out of their land.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Wednesday rolls around, and it's Wednesday afternoon, and we could see way up on the hills this convoy of vehicles coming out of the mountains. And now we haven't been on the mountain for, what, 5 days? And no one been out off the road in 5 days because of these agents that have locked the land down. So we see this convoy. We get our binoculars, and we see that there's 14 vehicles. And 13 of them are their armed agents in these vehicles. And they're escorting a dump truck and a backhoe. So the dump truck is pulling a trailer with the backhoe on it. And they've just been, they're coming out of the mountains like they're just done doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the people are like, well, let's go down. And when they come on the main road, we'll protest them. We got our signs and, you know, we'll give them, we'll give them
what for?
We'll give them heck. Yeah, yeah. What are you here for? And we'll, you know, we don't, you know, we'll protest.
Yeah.
And
save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back road.